Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hi everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's really wonderful to have your company for another episode of the show. My guest today is Michael Lysenblatt, and Michael was first on our show actually way back in 2018 for episode 169, which seems like yesterday, but it's actually quite a while ago. A lot's happened. And in that episode, we spoke about how to bounce back from setbacks. And of course, since that podcast was recorded, a lot has happened. We've seen the pace of change increase rapidly. We've seen, obviously, COVID happen. We've seen technological advances through AI and the like. And the impact of that on humans is that we need to be able to adapt quickly and we need to be able to continue to perform at a high level. And what Michael really shares today is how to cope in a pressurized, fast-paced world. I don't think that pace is going to change necessarily, but how we adapt to it, how we cope with it, how we interact with it is what's going to set us up for success into the future. So if you've got any interest in being a high-performance business, which I know you do because that's who listens to this program, or if you've got interest in being a high-performance individual or part of a high-performance team, then you're going to find the comments, the resources, the conversations that Michael has with us here really useful and beneficial. So please do have a pen and paper handy. I know you're going to get a lot from this conversation. So without any further ado, here's Michael Lysenblatt. Michael, welcome back to Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's great to have you here, mate. How's things?
Jesse, life has been busy as always, but actually quite fulfilling. There's been a lot of good stuff that's happening amongst all the challenge, so happy to chat.
Oh, mate. Well, we spoke last in episode 169, if you can believe it. That's nearly 300 episodes ago.
Wow.
Wow. So what's happened there? So that's nearly 6 years. And
it's a lot of grey hair.
I know. I've certainly got a ton, mate. So that's just things have changed. But what I'm interested to talk about today, mate, is actually change. And since we last spoke, obviously we've had lots of upheaval. We've had COVID. We've had turmoil in the world. We've had technological advances through the release of AI, ChatGPT, all that sort of stuff. Like the world has changed a lot. So the topic of resilience, I think, is going to be a really important one on an ongoing basis. But where do you see things at the moment? What's news in your world?
Well, I'm seeing a couple of impacts. Talking about sort of post-COVID, we've actually noticed now that the nature of pressure is changing in terms of speed. Things are faster in terms of expectation, shorter lead times, the amount of change that takes place, and the expectation on people to integrate change is, again, faster, tighter, quicker. And so what that does to the human psyche is quite specific. How strain it places and the way that people manage that is either particularly well or average. And it's not well or bad. The average, if I'm just coping and getting through, I'm not progressing, I'm staying where I am. And so the challenge with that around high performance and resilience as things change is not to plateau, not to just get through and idle, but to go, what I need to do in these changing environments to be able to thrive, to get for high performance. That's a trickier question, given that our hands are now touching more challenges and changes, our attention is elsewhere. And you mentioned AI, what that does to the caliber and the connection that I've got with my clients as well.
I wanted to talk a bit about the pace of change, and I don't know how we measure the pace of change. I'm sure there's a metric somewhere, but it feels to me that the world is speeding up. It feels to me that people are working harder just to stay in the same place, like one of those treadmills that seems to get faster and faster. Is there evidence to suggest that the pace of change is increasing, or is it just a feeling that perhaps some of us might be experiencing?
So there's a study that came out, and it found that 2016, the average organization had about two planned changes over a calendar year. Fast forward 2022, so 6 years ahead of that, an average organization had 10 planned changes over a calendar year. So that's fivefold. That doesn't take into account the unplanned changes as well. When they measured engagement 2016, they said, 78% of an average group said, we're okay with change, we're happy to embrace it. Fast forward to 2022, that dropped down to about 34%.
Wow.
We're a little change fatigued, we're a bit over it. We'll kind of lean in, but because we have to. So the amount of change in shorter periods of time are significantly increased. But what it does for our brain, that the real challenge is our brain is wired for two things. Our brain is wired for consistency. We like to do things in certain ways. And as we know, the brain will put things into subroutines. So they don't have to, when I'm walking, if I'm on the phone or having a drink, I don't have to think about my steps. It does that automatically. It pops it into a little subroutine. And so when you say, hang on, I now have to change that subroutine that I've got on autopilot, the brain, like a little child, just goes, do we have to? Do we have to change that? And so that's where that innate resistance to, hey, mate, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, saying sort of comes from. You know, that's just how we do things around here. And what that is reflective of is that my brain likes the way that it's programmed things and it works. I got a certain level of competency when I know, for example, where my machinery is, where things are. I know that kind of rhythm. And when you introduce change, it goes, my competency is now threatened. And so it doesn't like that. The other part, which is kind of a bit of a paradox, is that the brain is also geared for change. As you know, the neuroplasticity of the brain is designed to make new connections through the axons and the neural connections. So it's actually fine to introduce new habits and thinking patterns because of the plasticity is designed to make those connections. So there is a tug of war between I want it the same, but I'm designed for change.
Yeah.
This is where we have to understand why there's resistance, but also okay to make it work. And we've got to help people, particularly when they drive business, to be able to embrace the stuff that they can't control but will be flooded with in short periods of time.
So let's talk about that, because I think I don't think I'd be the only person to feel that sensation of like there's a wave coming over the top of us. And, you know, seeing that wave, dealing with that wave, also not being able to control that wave can, for some people, create a sense of stress, can create a sense of anxiety, and it can create a sense of, how am I going to get through this? And I wanted to talk about the adaptive capacity to be able to deal with those changes that are thrust upon us rather than those that we choose. So have you got any thoughts that might be useful on that?
Yeah, when we look at adaptive capacity, it really speaks to the idea of how do I guess, morph myself to be in the best possible position to solve that problem. How do I adapt where I'm up to? And so a lot of that will come down to three types of factors. Number one, the questions that you ask yourself, meaning if I'm dealing, as you said, that wave of change, that wave of problems, wave of things that I can't control, when I start asking myself questions of, why does this have to happen all the time? How am I going to deal with that? And I don't have time for that. What those questions do is they reinforce to me that I don't have control. They reinforce to me that this is happening to me. I'm a bit of a victim in this situation and I feel overwhelmed. How am I going to do this? It is a question of exasperation, but it reaffirms that I am overloaded. So what it does is it takes our attention onto where we don't have control. We saw this during the lockdowns, particularly here in Melbourne, where we had all the media around what you now can't do and what's going to happen to business and all the uncertainty. And every conversation was, how long will this last for? And what am I going to do with my business? Questions that reaffirmed the powerlessness that I feel. And so when we get in the habit of responding to change with questions that highlight our powerlessness or our overwhelm, we don't see solutions. Our ability to have that adaptive capacity shrinks down. So we've really got to look at the quality of questions we ask. And a different type of question is, okay, so what do I need to do here to stay in control? I've got a big, rich history of martial arts. I love martial arts because it just trains you physically, but also mentally to handle the stuff you can't control. One of the guys that I train with, he talks about getting yourself in the best position regardless of what's being at you. He said your job when someone attacks you is to think about capitalizing on position where you have the most control. So the kinds of questions now that you ask yourself when someone's attacking you, need to reaffirm a sense of confidence, but also strategic. Mm. So, which means that someone's attacking, all right, where do I need to be? How do I control this? How do I avoid this? In the same way, we need to ask questions that reaffirm that we are in control and a solution is out there. There is a solution to this. And there's some of those questions might be, all right, so how do I not only cope with this? I don't want to ask the cope questions. How do I capitalize on this?
Mm.
It was two different questions. How do I cope? Talks about standing still.
Yep.
That's fine. But really, by nature, our body is designed to cope with anything. You put us underwater, we don't need to do a course to work out, oh, I've got to get above water. It just knows that instinctively.
Yes.
But how do I capitalize? That sometimes is a counterintuitive way of thinking. So I might need to do something that I'm not naturally good at to capitalize on that. And therefore, we have people in business who, I've always done it this way, it's always worked, yes. But if you want to capitalize on change, you want to capitalize on what's you can't control, you might need to do things differently. You might need to relate to people differently. You might need to learn something different that isn't what got you here, but would need to be what gets you to the next step. So understanding the questions we ask exposes different possibilities.
I think what's popping up for me here, mate, is a couple of things. One is that fixed mindset versus growth mindset.
Yeah.
And the other one is reframing problems or situations as opportunities and going, where's the opportunity in this? You know, the wave is coming. How do I surf it rather than how do I get crushed by it? And how can I, as you say, position myself strategically to do the best I can and capitalize on things? Because for some people, they're perhaps not accustomed to seeing the world through that lens of opportunity, or they're not accustomed to having a growth mindset. And what I want to ask you about is for those people who have been able to get by preserving the status quo and are now being asked to shift, yes, there's the questions that they need to ask themselves to look for the opportunity, but it probably isn't instinctive for them yet. How do they start to build that muscle? Because with your martial arts background, your muscle memory is going to kick in. You're going to know how to position your body when an attacker comes. You're going to know where your feet need to be, where your body weight needs to be, all that sort of stuff. It's muscle memory. It's been trained.
Yeah.
For these guys, they're still at white belt, right? They're stepping onto into the dojo for the first time. How do they build that muscle?
So the challenge there is, as you've said, yes, ask the question, but there's going to be resistance to that question. There's going to be resistance to go, I'm too old. I've been doing it this way. I'm too this. I'm too that. I couldn't do that. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing because it's worked. And that's where the growth opportunity is looking at what's behind that resistance, because they can read whatever books, go to whatever courses and go, yeah, that knowledge makes sense. But if there's that resistance to implementation of the I'm not this to do it, all of that falls on deaf ears. And what often sits behind the I'm not good enough or able to is a sense of fear of failure.
Yeah.
Because, and I think it's often the case, anyone who builds up their own business that's based on their own reputation is that if I get stuff wrong, I look bad. I lose clients, I lose cash flow, I lose reputation. And that's a risk that I'm not prepared to take. And so what will happen is that I will implement only what I know I will get right and can get right consistently. When you say to me, I need you to stretch your comfort zone and try stuff that you're not good at, all of a sudden I'm faced with the reality that I'm going to not do something well. I'm going to fail at that. And if I'm not familiar with failing, that's a scary place to be. And I'm going to resist that till the cows come in. I'm going to have a whole bunch of excuses and reasons and justifications and stories and narratives that are really convincing. They're really good. But ultimately, it's just my fear of failure stopping me from trying something new. The growth opportunity, Jesse, right there for that person is recognizing that that barrier is coming from them. And I'm just afraid of getting this wrong.
So it's the internal battle, right? And
And
I think that's a really important one to understand. This is a question, and again, I don't know there's any evidence for this. In fact, there's probably not, but let me ask the question nonetheless. Do you find that adaptive capacity changes across age groups at all? Like, as you get older, do you become a little more set in your ways? I don't know if it's a myth, but the thought process is you get a bit older, a bit more stuck in your ways, whereas younger people might be a little more adaptive and flexible. Is that true, or is that just a load of codswallop?
I hesitate to give a sweeping statement across that, because you'll say, oh, well, the typical response would be, oh, the older people are stuck in their ways, the new ones are kind of open to new things. But then again, the new ones are kind of all about themselves and the older ones are all about giving. So there's a stereotypical answer to that, which is not wrong. It's not wrong. It's just incomplete.
Yes.
Because I think what's missing amongst that is a person's willingness to grow. What we've found, particularly in the last couple of years, as pressure has increased and the desire to be able to find pockets of joy become a little more important, people would only take work if it's the work they want to do. There's that less likeliness, I want to do work that doesn't serve me just to pay, to pay bills. I want to make sure I'm enjoying what I'm doing. So it becomes a little more about me. The world is now circling more about what I want to do, what feels good to me. I'll stay on the video as long as it's good. If not, I'll just change that. If I want something different, I'll just get what I want now. So the world becomes more about me. And so that I would want others to change to suit what I want. So in terms of adaptive capacity, if a person is falling into the trap of you need to change for me, then irrespective of age, they're going to struggle to be able to relate to different age groups, to different pressures, because there's a sense, there's a subtle sense of entitlement. And it's probably the wrong word, but follow me for a moment, that I'm expecting that something or someone will come to assistance or will bend or will help or will work with me to solve this problem. Where adaptive capacity now needs to be able to lift is a sense of accountability and ownership to go, really, if it's going to change, I need to adapt to it. And that's where the gap often is now, that those that are willing or not willing, if they are change in generation, it's a sense of expectation that, well, you should speak with more respect. Well, you should understand the difference in what's going on now. You should get up with the times. Both are correct, but both are expecting you to come to me.
Yeah. It's funny you bring this up. We had a conversation about this a week or so ago at an event. It was a great question. One of the participants asked a question where she had an older male dentist speaking in a way that was, I suppose, upsetting to a younger female dental assistant. And there's a gender difference, there's an age difference, there's a positional power difference potentially.
Yeah.
And this this practice owner was kind of caught in the middle, going like, what do I do? And it was a really good question. And your point about understanding one another's perspective and kind of meeting each other and not expecting the other one to yield to them is a really important aspect. And I think what's also really interesting around that is curiosity.
Yes.
And I'm interested to get your thoughts on where curiosity and resilience meet.
Yeah. And that is such a beautiful meeting point, because what curiosity says is I wonder if, and what that question does, again, it's the questions we ask ourselves, it takes it away from being all about me and me being right and me having a sense of self-righteousness that you should treat me or I should do. But I wonder if I'm missing something. I wonder if there's another piece to the puzzle that I can't quite see. I wonder if there's another way. And the moment I do that, I'm starting to move beyond my ego. Mm. Now, the beautiful thing about the whole thing of curiosity, it also allows space for compassion and empathy.
Mm.
So rather than me coming in and telling you what you should be doing and what you're doing wrong and what you need to do to make this better, it actually says, and I think it was Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Habit 5, seek first to understand before being understood. And this whole concept of let me understand first what's going on. Let me just pause my judgment for a bit. Let me just put my ego to the side about who I am and how dare you treat me and all that and what I know. Just put that to the side and just, as you said, be curious, but be curious with compassion. with empathy and just let me understand, why are you behaving this way? What am I missing? How are you feeling? Those questions bring in an emotional intelligence now that ego blocks. When I'm sitting behind ego, I don't have the desire to ask those questions. When I move that to the side and I get curious, it just then opens a whole possibility of dynamic that I'm probably missing because I know gets in the way rather than I wonder if can lead from that. So that beautiful aspect of, and these are not new concepts, you know, compassion, empathy, curiosity, these are not, but they are so valuable when it comes to high performance, when it comes to creating engagement in your team, when it comes to driving a business in change. Your ability to stop, listen, ask good questions and be open to what comes back, it just scales up what's possible.
So actually, that's a really good segue because I do want to talk about the topic of high performance, because the people we work with are really interested in how do I become the best that I can be? How do I help others become the best they can be so that we can do amazing things together?
Yeah.
Where does self-confidence begin and end, and where does ego take over, and what's that interplay there as it relates to performance?
We need a sense of aspiration. We need a sense of, I've got to fight for something. So I'm seeing my dad, who was always a hard worker, entrepreneur, a go-getter, always chasing something, retiring just recently, last couple of years. And dad's gone from, you know, what are we doing next? And always pushing me to do something more and different to just what's for lunch, you know, and love my dad. He's my inspiration. He's my role model, my mentor. But I said, Dad, you've got to be fighting for something. You can't just throw that away and then just go from lunch to whatever's next, to holidays. It's a lovely lifestyle, but I can see it in him that he needs to chase something. So ego is important to go, I want. I want isn't selfish. It's a sense of I'm chasing something. There is something inert in us. If we're not chasing, we're just sitting and we're kind of plateauing. So this is healthy. And I think it gets beyond, the whole thing of strong ego, of not the I'm not good enough, the imposter syndrome, can I, which will always be alive. Anyone whose reputation is out there will always have a low level of imposter syndrome that we're going to deal with at some level. That's okay, as long as it doesn't speak too loud. We can manage that. Mm-hmm. But we need that strong ego to chase, because another aspect of high performance are the aspirations we set. If I'm setting an aspiration that's just, I just need to get through, I just need to get this stuff done, then I'm not going to be getting high performance. I'm going to be getting competence or even complacency just to get through. I always want to be going, what is best practice look like? What does having a competitive edge look like in my practice? If I wanted to be the employer of choice, for example, what difference does that? I've got to be chasing refinement. And so my ego needs to have a sense of hunger. But it's got to be combined, as you mentioned before, with curiosity. Not I know, but I wonder if.
Yeah.
And I wonder if has to stretch me into places that I haven't been before. So I'm learning and I'm growing. If I'm doing the same things I already know, I'm not. I'm just staying where I am, running fast to stand still. I've got to be a little out of my comfort zone, something new, something different. Because my brain is hungry for that. And that's what keeps that sort of drive alive. So healthy ego, but it's got to have that balance with taking feedback in. Not how great am I, but how interesting is this?
Yeah. One of the things I've always been fascinated with is sports. And there's, you know, sports like yours, martial arts, which is a pretty individual pursuit. And I like playing tennis. That's also an individual pursuit. But I've also played team sports, rowing and other things. I'm sure you have too. In an individual sport, you're pretty self-reliant. You set your own standards. You achieve your own goals. You know, you're it basically. In a team, as in business, you've got to be able to work well with others and have a high-performance team versus a high-performer, you know, solo. And so one of the questions I've got for you, I've got several. One is bringing out the best in others, creating the environment for high performance. You know, how do you create that culture? How do you create that environment? You know, you want to bring your team. We're all on this earth to do great work. And I know the people listening to this podcast are ambitious, they're driven, they're motivated, they want to do good stuff. But for them to be able to do that, they've got to be able to build and lead a great team. So first question is, how do we create the environment? The second question is, if people don't share your values around high performance, how do you – it'll probably be fairly self-evident. It'll be probably pretty obvious. But then dealing with that.
Yeah. Difficult for people to get on board if you haven't articulated what high performance is. And that might sound obvious, but what will happen is that in a person's mind, they know what high performance looks like, but maybe that hasn't been made clear. There are no clear measurables, not just in terms of output or clients or cash flow, but in terms of behavior, in terms of culture. We need that to be clear so that we have a measurable, are we on track or off track to do that? And that might sound obvious and basic, but it's fundamental to actually building from that, to actually have a clear definition of what high performance is and to know when it's not. You know, what does my behavior look like when it's not? So, for example, it might be high-performing culture is one that speaks openly and honestly, but it also calls out bad behavior when it happens. And you go, well, yeah, obviously. But no. What that means is even as the head principal of a practice, if I've done something that's out of integrity or more self-interest or not aligned with the value of the practice, I need my dental hygienist to call that out. I need someone who's at a different level of pecking order to me to be able to call that out. That's a high-performing culture. I need to be able to clear that. So having a clear definition. But then, Jesse, you talked about bringing people along and what it takes to create that. There is a seesaw balance between two fundamental aspects, which is conviction and compassion. And we need to have the conviction of what we stand for, what I'm driving towards, because without that, I'm just getting through each day. And that needs to be clearly articulated. But then to facilitate that, I've got to have the compassion. If I want buy-in, I can't just be dictatorship, this is how it's done. I need to be clear in what I stand for, but I also need to understand how people are going to achieve that. What's their journey? Where are they up to? What's their challenge? But I don't want to give up my spine in order to do that. And so here's the challenge that people have. They feel in order to be compassionate, I must compromise on what I stand for. But you don't. You can actually have full compassion with having accountability to outcomes and standards and processes. And that's where the mistake has come through, is that, and we've seen that through different types of education. It used to be just listen to what I say, sit still, take the note and go. And that in schools, it's moved totally the opposite way to, so how do you like to learn and what can we do and what are flexible things? So we've got a whole range, but we need to also understand that there's value in both, in actually instructive learning and also experiential learning as well. There's got to be a way of doing both. In the same way, have the conviction, not at the expense of the compassion. Have the compassion, not at the expense of the conviction. And that can be a difficult balance to tread, but one that a leader needs to be mindful of as they're having their conversations.
Yeah. So one of the things that we spoke about way back in episode 169 was bouncing back from setbacks. And I think, you know, if you're going to be a high-performance person or a high-performance team or a high-performance business, you're going to be, you know, stretching your growth zone. You're going to be pushing the envelope potentially. And that means from time to time you're going to make a misstep or a boo-boo or things aren't always going to work out as you planned, right? That's kind of life, right? One of my early mentors shared with me, in his experience, the people that succeeded most in life were not necessarily the most talented, but the ones that could deal with setbacks the best. And I think that there's some validity in that. And I wanted to ask your thoughts about, again, dealing with those setbacks in a performance type of environment, reframing the lessons as lessons or the setbacks as a lesson, and then how do you reset and continue to move forward with the same degree of enthusiasm? Because I know resilience is, you know, I'm thinking about organizational resilience and flexibility here and adaptive capacity. How do you take the knock on the chin and pony up again?
My counsel here is a little bit unorthodox. And if you akin it to boxing,
yep,
where you're going to get in the ring, and if you're new to boxing, you're going to get hit.
Yeah.
and it ain't going to feel good. And what will happen to first-time boxers, one of two things, they'll go, right, done, thank you. I know what that feels like, I'm out. Or they'll go, all right, I got to learn to keep my hands up a little more often, and they'll go and progress. In business, it's actually similar. You need to get familiar with what failure looks like and feels like. If you are a high performer and you've gone through your schooling education, top of the grade, and you've come through your business and you've always achieved, you probably don't know what it feels like to get a couple of knocks, a couple of hits time and time again, and then to ask you to get back up after that because it's unfamiliar. And I would suspect that there's a lot of reputation or ego that's attached with achievement. I am regarded highly by my peers. I measure my success on what I can achieve. So I'm unfamiliar with failure. I'll do the stuff that I can achieve, but not the stuff that I can't potentially. Mm. What my counsel here is to get out and do an activity separate to business that you get a chance to fail at. I want you to taste what it feels like to fail. And it might be, hey, get into a boxing ring with a trainer. Don't have your head taken off, but know what it feels like to be out of control, to not have the skills to protect yourself, and go back time and time again and learn what it feels like to get better, to be a white belt again. Because when you approach life as a white belt of I don't know and I need to know, failure just becomes a stepping stone to getting better. I don't expect if I'm going to train or fight with someone, I'm going to be better than if I'm a white belt. I just know they're going to be stronger, better, more advanced than me. So my expectation is adjusted, which means that my ability to grow is faster if I don't make failure wrong. Mm. But if I'm not familiar with that, I'm going to resist failure. I'm going to reframe failure as going, well, that's a problem. I'm going to blame someone else. I'm going to push it away. I'm going to ignore it. And therefore, my ego will get in the way. So this concept you mentioned before, Carol Dweck's mindset of growth and fixed mindset, is simply what is my relationship to failure like? Am I familiar with it? Most likely, a high performer has gotten through because they're really good and they keep going, whether it be sport or business. But they need to know the taste of failure so that it's not unfamiliar to them. Go out, fail somewhere consistently. So when you are putting new ideas in place, that sting isn't something you've experienced for the first time. And your brain has learned to reframe that to go, oh, pain, and you take a David Goggins approach. If those who don't know who David Goggins is, just a quick YouTube search, and you'll see this madman going on long runs and long training, and he talks about his pain is his fuel, you know, go be hard, go strong, and he does this insane kind of training, but his philosophy is that his pain is a message that his body's getting stronger, or it's weakness, leaving the body, whatever it is, how he reframes it, but he reframes it in something that is useful. And as a business owner, you want to be able to be familiar enough so that you can use that as a stepping stone for learning and improvement. Otherwise, you are stuck doing things the same way without growth.
I really love that because I think, you know, as we said a moment ago, if you're going to be doing new things in business, you're going to make some mistakes, right? No one gets it right first time all the time. And I think you're right. I think, you know, learning how to deal with those setbacks and keep moving forward is really, really important. One of the things that perhaps is a little, I don't know if it's kind of out of the scope of our conversation, but I'll bring it up nonetheless because you spoke a little bit about identity a moment ago, perhaps not as directly as I'm naming it, but my identity is tied up with being successful. My identity is tied up with being right. My identity is tied up with, and especially for a lot of the guys listening to this podcast, the guys and the girls, sorry, just to be politically correct, and you know, I use guys as a gender neutral term, but anyway, but for those people listening to the podcast, most of them have come through school pretty easily. Most of them have come through, you know, they're relatively bright to get into dentistry, relatively bright to get through dentistry. And so setbacks has not, as you say, been part of their thing. So learning how to fail is really important, as you said. But it's the identity piece I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
How do we bring this, it's okay for me to fail, into my identity? I understand academically I'm going to get into the boxing ring and someone's going to beat the snot out of me and I'm going to get better at it and hold my hands up better and do all that jazz, maybe duck and bob and weave a little bit, hopefully. But still, this attachment to me as a person, my value, my self-worth is I'm Dr. So-and-so, I'm smart, I'm capable, I'm this, I'm whatever. How do we attach or attack that idea?
we are designed by nature to survive. One way or another, you know, if you cut yourself, you can put a Band-Aid, but ultimately it's the body that heals itself. Same thing with breaking a bone. You can put a cast, but it's the bone that will heal itself. Your body is designed by nature to keep moving forward, to keep changing, to keep you alive. And then the same concept, we need a sense of purpose, a sense of achievement that tells us that I am achieving, I am of value. It's a validation. What happens often professionally is that I find my lane of where I am validated, and it can be my professional lane. So I invest a lot of my energy, my time into that one lane, and I protect it with all my might to make sure that stays there. And all my self-value and my self-worth gets attached to those outcomes. And I've actually then lost other ways of validating who I am and my worth. I am a doctor, I'm a dentist, I'm this, that's what makes me, that's who I am. Well, actually, it's just one of the lanes that defines you. I know that a lot of people in business, when they get to sort of my age, you know, our age in that respect, they start to reassess, you know, well, what else is there? I may have achieved a certain financial success or a certain level of holidays and whatnot, but that might be chasing something else, questioning, who else am I? If I'm not practicing in the way that I am, who am I? Mm. And that's where we actually need multiple currencies of success. We need to recognize that, yes, you've invested into one area, but how can you create success somewhere else? What does success as a parent look like?
Mm.
And then, here's the interesting thing, Jesse, if we take the same metric or the same framework of our professional success and we apply it to family, it becomes the metric for business is about getting stuff right, being successful.
Yep.
If we take that framework and we go, oh, am I successful in family? I then start to measure how successful my kids are. Did they follow a trajectory? Did I parent? And it's the wrong framework. That's my opinion. It's the wrong frame because you're then stuck. You've just changed lanes, but it's the same thing. You're just calling it something else. We need to have not just multiple currencies, multiple measurements of what success looks like. Maybe as a dad, the question would be, how good am I as a father? How good is my listening skill? How good can I take on feedback from my kids? How well can I suspend judgment? If I look at one of my children, can I lovingly go, what a great person, and can I please keep my mouth shut and not keep giving them advice, just be with them and watch them as they go through life? Not all the time, but can I do that from time to time? Can I have a different currency and a different measurement of success, which means that me as an individual, for high performance, it's not just one lane. There are multiple lanes with multiple frameworks. That is critical, particularly as your career matures and your either capacity or desire to achieve in one lane may waver. You want to have other things that you can start to connect. Because if you don't have that, we've seen this, particularly you see the studies that have done for people who've been in the army forever and they retire, and men particularly drop dead in the first 3 years.
Yeah.
Why? Because their whole purpose is suddenly stopped and there's nothing else. What are they going to do? Have lunch? How many games of golf are you going to play when you're used to kind of doing certain things in a high caliber? We need to have a natural jump to these other currencies that I feel a different type of achievement and fulfillment with.
Oh, mate, so much there. As you were talking, I was thinking, okay, Jesse, do not comment on your daughter's boyfriends anymore is what I'm taking away from that. Just, zip it, pal. Anyway.
You may still need to say something.
Yeah, I don't know.
How long can I go for before I open my mouth? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. Anyway, so fathers of daughters, yeah, you know where I am. Anyway, yes. One of the things that we talk about in the work that we do is building a business so good that if you choose to sell it, you could sell it, and you might choose not to sell it, but it's still great to own, right? And we've got a couple of clients actually at the moment who are looking at transitioning out of their practice and into the next phase of their life. And what's really interesting is rather moving away from something about what are you moving towards? And I think what you've just spoken about, these other lanes, is actually really, really important, but to have those lanes built before you step out of the lane that you're in. So for you know, for those people kind of nearing the end of their practicing life or business ownership journey or whatever language you put around that, making sure you've got something really productive and fulfilling to go to, I think is going to be really key.
And if I can add to that, Jesse, it almost comes full circle back to where we started in terms of the whole idea that the world is getting faster, there's a higher rate of change. And if our approach to more and bigger is just going faster, which is an innate response to that, all we're going to do is learn how to work harder and achieve more. But when that vertical, when that aspect there slows down, I can't necessarily take that into another lane. I've got to be able to have other ways of achieving. And what we're doing now is that we are programming our brains that the way to cope is harder, faster, more, quicker, and to keep doing that. And this is why I mentioned initially that the whole concept of high performance isn't just the faster spinning wheel. It might actually be doing something that is counterintuitive, that brings out high performance, that allows me to repurpose pressure to go, this particular challenge is going to teach me patience.
Yeah.
I know that at least out of my three kids, two of them, their purpose for being here is to teach me patience. That is without question. And it's an interesting lesson because I like to tell what I see and hear and to coach and to help. And I often hear my wife's voice to say, Mike, will you just stop talking and telling and let them experience, let them do and work with them. And so in that concept, it's counterintuitive. So the skill set that has helped business owners to build up and to be successful and to do more and to have capacity may be a great skill set for now, but they may need something different to either advance their business or to move on to what's next.
I feel like I could talk to you for 3 days. Wow, there's so many good things I want to continue to talk about, but we'll be here literally for 3 days. Michael, I really want to say thank you. You have been unbelievably generous. And ladies and gents, pleasure. I'm going to encourage you to listen to Michael's advice and podcast there for a couple of times over because there's so many pearls of wisdom, so many threads of gold in there. Michael, just as we wrap up, I guess what I'd really like to kind of ask you, if you could give us a few parting words or thoughts around any final nuggets around coping with, change in a fast-paced world, dealing with that high-pressure environment, anything that you think we needed to say that we haven't said so far, what would be your parting words there, mate?
And I think the key is in what we think when we have to deal with stuff. I want us to stop thinking about how I cope and how I thrive. I want us to change three things. Be mindful of the questions that we ask ourselves and whether it actually lifts us into possibility or keeps us where we are. Be mindful of the language that we use, how I describe things and the way that I look at possibilities based on the framing of the words. And thirdly, the aspirations that you hold. We want to aim higher than just getting through. We want to go, if it is possible to have this incredible lifestyle or relationship or to deal with or repurpose this challenge we're dealing with, how might I do that and what can I do to be best practice right now? So the language that we use, the aspirations we hold and the questions that we ask are often key to what we achieve when we're dealing with high-pressure environments.
That is absolute gold. Thank you for that. And ladies and gents, again, I really encourage you to go back through the podcast and have a listen. I'm also going to encourage you to head across to Michael's website, which is bouncebackfast.com.au. Check out a bunch of his stuff on the website, YouTube videos here and there. Lots of really good resources that I'm going to encourage you to go and read to check out. Michael, is there anything else you want to leave the audience with? Any resources that you think might be useful for them?
Probably the most useful one is where we look at the different caliber, the different types of resilience that exists. And it's not a question of are you resilient, but how are you resilient? And is that type of resilience serving you or is it holding you back? And if your resilience is one that, hey, I can cope and I can manage, it actually is a glass ceiling. I've put together a white paper, And it's on the landing page of the website, bouncebackfast.com.au. Scroll to the bottom, and it's the white paper on building resilient teams. Just download that, and I'd encourage you to share that with your team and get them to have a look and where they sit on this particular scale of resilience. If it's something that resonates, reach out. There's a self-assessment. We call this the pressure-proof self-assessment. You can actually work out where your strengths and weaknesses lie in the four qualities of high performance, which come from the scale of resilience too.
Great, fantastic. So head across to the website there. You're going to get a lot of goodies there. Remember, it's bouncebackfast.com.au. Grab the white paper, read through that, go through the self-assessment. I think that'll give everyone some really good insights. As Michael said, do it with your team, because I think having that conversation with your team will be really fruitful and give you insight into them and give them insight into you. And of course, we're going back to that concept of understanding and curiosity and all those things we spoke about. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I'm really grateful to you once again for sharing your wisdom and your expertise. It's been 300 episodes between the last time we spoke and this one. So let's not leave it that long again, and we'll get you back and we'll have another conversation. But I really appreciate you taking the time to share your wisdom with us, mate.
No, absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.